Hello, this is Ron Bond, and it's Michael Saturday Surprise for October 28th, 2017. And tonight, we're going to talk about survival. Now, I can't take credit for this. I really can't. As you know, I generally like to do themes when I do these things, and we're going to do a theme tonight. But I can't take credit for it because my son was here not long ago visiting, and we got to playing radio programs, and we play a lot of radio programs here, and he enjoys them. And I played something, and he said, why don't you make a theme out of that? So here we go. So I give credit to my son, Rob, for this one. So first of all, we're going to do A Pale of Air from X-1 from March 28th, 1956. On X-1, it's A Pale of Air.
In just a moment, X-1, but first, if you're planning to join the family for this holiday weekend, remember you have a friend who will keep you company through the long hours on the road. That friend is your car radio, and it brings you a full weekend of the most stimulating variety entertainment when you tune in to NBC's Monitor. Yes, you set your dial just once for hours and hours of refreshing variety. News as it happens, sports coverage, everything from baseball to skin diving, interviews with the stars, plus lots of the relaxing music you like to hear. It's all on Monitor this weekend. And now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC. Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X-1. Tonight's story, A Pail of Air, by Fritz Leiber.
It was pretty quiet in the nest. Pa was just sitting by the fire, staring into it like he does these days. And Ma was asleep. That's why it was so quiet. Ma has some pretty bad times when she just screams and screams and huddles back against the blankets that line the nest. Sis was looking at herself in the mirror that hangs next to the bookshelf. I don't know what she finds to look at so long, but then she's a girl. She just looks at herself. Saturdays, when Pa puts a couple of extra lumps of coal on the fire and we take a bath, she looks at herself in the mirror and sometimes she cries. I dropped the book I was reading, and I guess that woke Ma.
Huh? What? Ma?
Pick up the book, Bud.
I'm sorry, Pa.
It's come back. Hasn't it, Alfred? It's come back.
It was just Bud. He dropped his book.
Oh, but it's come back. Well, it's out there now, isn't it? I feel a lot warmer.
Now, Ethel.
It's up there in the sky. Just the way it always was. I know. I had a dream, Alfred.
I know, dear. Sis, melt your mother a cup of water.
I'm combing my hair.
Sis.
Oh, all right.
I've got to get up. I know it's there. There'll be crocuses. And the spring bulbs. And daffodils.
What are daffodils, Ma?
Well, Buddy, they're a flower. And they're very pretty. Yellow. On a tall green stalk. Oh, I want to go out. I want to take the children out.
All right now, Ethel. Here's some water.
Come on, children. We'll all go out and you can play in the sun.
Sure, Ma.
Here, drink the water, Ma.
Cold, Alfred. You wrap on the pipes and make that super send up some more heat.
What's a super, Pa?
It doesn't matter, Bud. There aren't any anymore.
Oh.
Pa, the pail's running low.
Bud, you better get into your things and go out and get an extra pail of air.
There are a couple of pails behind the first blanket.
Go on, get into your things.
It isn't back, is it?
No, it isn't.
There's no sun in the sky. No sun, is there?
No, Ma. What was it like?
The sun.
Sis, don't get your Ma upset.
The sun was yellow. And so bright you couldn't look at it. Burning hot. So hot. But when you stretched out in it, made you feel warm all over. Tingly warm. Been so long since I've been that warm.
I was warm last year on my birthday when Pa put all that extra coal on.
And then every morning it would come out of the east, make the clouds all pink and yellow. And the mist would rise in the ground, and then slowly everything would glow warmer, warmer. And then it would be up there in the sky, shining, warm.
Hurry up, Bud.
I'm almost ready, Pa.
I want the sun. I want the sun back. Alfred, get me the sun.
It's gone, Ethel. There's nothing I can do.
For Christmas? On my birthday?
Go ahead, Bud. Take the big pail and get it full this time. There's no sense in taking the trip for only half a bucket of air.
Oh, I spilled it the last time.
It's dark, Alfred, it's dark.
Go ahead, Bud.
Strap down the helmet, will you, sis?
For goodness sake, stand up straight.
Okay. All right, I'll be right back.
Don't hold the blankets open too long. All right, Ethel. They're all safe. Bud will be right back with another pail of air. It's all right.
I went through the 30 or so blankets that Pa hung up to slow down the air escaping from the nest. Of course, I knew the way. I've been going out for air since I was a kid. Still, I get a funny, crawly feeling every time I go out of the nest. You gotta go up to the fifth floor, which is just above the blanket of frozen air. You see, when the earth got cold, all the water in the air froze first and made a blanket about 10 feet thick or so. And then down on top of that dropped all the crystals of frozen air, making another blanket 60 or 70 feet thick. I came out of the window we use on the fifth floor and started to scoop up the air into my pail. I had it about full. Boy, my fingers are getting pretty cold. When I saw something. Hey! That's a light! Oh, darn it, I kicked over the bucket. Oh, there can't be a light. Not moving around in a window like that. There can't be. Ma and Pa and Sis are back in the nest. I'm up here, and there can't be anyone else. Everybody on Earth is dead except us. I had an idea how Ma must feel sometimes, the way she sees things. But there it was, moving around in the building across the way. I stood there shaking, and I almost froze my feet. I did frost my helmet so solid on the inside I couldn't see anything. So I hurried up and scooped up another bucket of air and headed back for the nest as fast as I could. Pa! Pa, I saw something!
Go on, hang those outside clothes up by the fire.
Phew! Pa, I saw something, I did!
Shh! Your mother's quiet now. Don't upset her.
Pa, it was a light!
Wait till I get this air next to the fire. Give me the cloth, sis.
Shall I put another lump of coal on, Pa?
No. The oxygen from this bucket will get the fire up when it begins to melt. There.
Pa, I'm trying to tell you, I saw something up there. Light.
There's lots of light. Stars.
I know what stars look like, Dopey. They're big, steady white lights in the sky. This was down here in a building.
What is it? Alfred, what is it?
Nothing, Ethel. Now, what is this, Bud?
Well, first I thought it was a lady, a young lady. I mean it. Like in one of those old magazines. I thought I saw it in a window. But then all I saw was a light.
You watched it for some time, son?
Long enough for it to pass five windows and go to the next floor.
And it didn't look like stray electricity?
No, Pa, I know what that looks like.
Or a star refracted through an icicle? Sometimes if you catch it at the right angle... It...
Pa, honest, I never saw anything like it before.
Huh. All right. I'll go out with you and you show me.
No, no, Alfred. You can't go and leave us alone, not both of you.
It's all right. We'll be right back.
Here's your helmet, Pa.
There's something out there. Well, we've known there was something out there waiting to get it.
Hand me my glove.
Something that's part of the cold, hates all warmth, wants to destroy the nest. It's been watching us all this time. Now it's coming after us, and it'll get you, and then it'll come for me. Oh, don't go. Alfred, please don't go.
Everything will be all right. Now, sis.
Yes, Pa?
You come watch the fire. Keep an eye on that air, too. If it gets too low or doesn't seem to be boiling fast enough, get another bucket behind the blanket.
Alfred, don't go.
I'll take care of it, Pa. Could there really be anybody out there?
I don't see how. We heard the last radio voices a year before Bud was born. There hasn't been anything since then.
Then what could it be?
I don't know. Probably just a reflection. An ice crystal cracking. Come on, Bud. Get your helmet on.
It's funny. When I go out alone, I'm not scared or anything. But when I go out with Pa, I always hang onto his belt like I used to when I was a little kid. Habit, I guess. It's the same no matter what trip we take. On the fifth floor, we stopped to rest just before we went out. We were in the room with the frozen people. The lady sitting looking at the door. The man holding his hands over that funny metal thing Pa calls a radiator. It was like a fire, I guess, but I don't see any place for the cold. We put our helmets together so we could talk.
Catch your breath, son.
Pa, would it be possible... I mean... for any of the frozen people to come to life? Like the ones down in the basement around the furnace when we go for water?
No, they're dead. They were caught too quickly when it happened.
Oh, Pa, how do we know we're the only ones?
We don't, but... well, there's a feeling you get. Because it's always night. There used to be some of that feeling every night in the old days. But the sun chased it away every morning. You wouldn't know about that. You weren't born when the dark star pulled us away from the sun. You wouldn't know unless you'd seen the sun.
I've seen the sun. It's that big star at the end of the Big Dipper. I've seen it.
It isn't the same. Come on. We're wasting time.
I don't know what the city looked like in the old days, but now it's beautiful. Starlight lets you see it pretty well. We're up on a hill, and the plain slopes down away from us. Some taller buildings push up out of the feathery plain, topped by rounded caps of air crystals. Some of them are on a slant because a lot of the buildings are badly twisted by the quakes and everything when a dark star pulled the earth away from the sun. That's why Pa can't seal up the nest airtight. The building's twisted too bad. Besides, we have to keep the chimney open. We touched our helmets together so we could talk.
Is that where you saw it, son?
It isn't there anymore.
Uh-huh.
But it feels different. I mean, as if there's something out here, waiting.
Bud, if you see something like that again, don't tell the others.
Huh? Why not?
Well, your ma's sort of nervous these days, and we owe her all the feeling of safety we can give her. Once it was when your sister was born, I was ready to give up and die, but your mother kept me trying. Another time, she kept the fire going a whole week all by herself when I was sick.
She couldn't do that now, not the way she is.
But you know that game we sometimes play, tossing a ball around? Well, courage is like a ball. A person can hold it only so long, and then he's got to toss it to someone else. When it's tossed your way, you've got to catch it and hold it tight. And hope there'll be someone else to toss it to when you get tired of being brave.
Yeah, I guess so.
Come on. We'll fill up the pails and get back.
But what about whatever it is out here?
We'll just have to wait and see. Come on. Before the helmets frost over.
It's pretty hard to hide your feelings in the nest. I mean, there's just room for the four of us. The blanket overhead just touches when Pa stands up straight. The floor is all covered with thick woolly rugs. Pa says it's inside a much bigger room, but I've never seen the real walls or ceiling. Well, anyway, Pa laughed and kidded about what I'd seen. He said I had an imagination, but we could tell he took it serious. It was Sunday morning by the clocks that Pa kept all wound up on the shelf. So it was time for the story. We all sat around in a circle the way we always do. Except I noticed that Pa casually took a hammer from the shelf and put it beside him. I always liked the story. Of course, Sis and I know it by heart for now. I mean, every Sunday since we were kids. But every once in a while, Pa surprises us by telling it a little different. Or throwing in some extras. It starts out with a song. Ma used to sing it, but she forgets the words sometimes. And now Pa sings it mostly.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, thy purple mountain majesties above the fruited plain.
Of course, the words don't mean anything. I mean, the skies are spacious enough, but there aren't any waves of grain, and the plain is all covered with a blanket of frozen air. But it's part of the story ceremony, and Pa likes it. He says it reminds him of the old days. After the song, Pa starts the story.
In the days of my youth, the sun hung above, golden and warm. And the earth was fruitful and multiplied, and the fields were green, and the day was glorious, and the wind blew across the hilltops, and the air was free and good to breathe.
That's the part of the story I like best, about how it was with the sun nice and warm. It's hard to believe all those people living without having to worry about cold and air, never waking up sweating and screaming because you dreamed the fire went out. It's impossible to believe, but Pa was a good storyteller, and he made it seem real.
And then the dark star came rushing out of space. In the beginning, they tried to keep the news from the people, but when the floods and the earthquake started, the truth came out. At first, they thought the dark star would hit the sun. And then they were afraid it would strike the earth itself. But it didn't. It only came close.
Pa tells it like the sun and the dark star fought for the earth like two dogs over a bone. I know what he means because I've seen a picture of a dog in a magazine. And then the dark star won and carried us off. But the sun kept the moon. There were earthquakes and floods. Pa says that mountains fell and oceans slopped over. Oceans, that's a lot of melted water lying around loose. It's hard to imagine. Pa says it was so. Then came the open question time in the story. Sis asked a question about what girls wore for clothes. And I asked Pa how people acted in those days when the earth was twisted and jerked almost apart.
Well, Bud, I was too busy to notice much. A friend of mine, Dr. Weisbrot, and Kelly, the geophysicist, and Walters, the astronomer, we knew what was going to happen. And we were working to fix up a place with airtight walls and insulation and big supplies of food and bottled air. But the place got smashed up in the earthquakes, and they were all killed. So I put the nest together at the last minute in the living room of our apartment. It's a four-room apartment.
You must have seen some of the people, like the frozen ones downstairs.
At that time, Bud, I only thought of one thing. Your mother
and survival. If I had stopped to think, I wouldn't have even tried to make the nest. It would have seemed ridiculous. Blankets and a coal fire against the cold and vacuum of space. But I didn't think. I survived.
I wasn't listening carefully as Pa went on about the building of the nest. I kept thinking about something else. About that light I'd seen outside. I kept asking myself, what if the frozen people were coming to life? What if they were like the liquid helium that crawls toward heat when it should be frozen solid? What if something were coming from the dark star to get us? Something making the frozen people move, not by themselves. Would fit with what I'd seen. A young lady's face and the moving light. I sat there and shivered, thinking of the frozen people with minds from the dark star creeping, crawling, snuffing their way, following the heat to the nest. And then, over from beyond the blankets, I thought I heard a tiny noise.
So I asked myself then, what's the use of going on? Why prolong a doomed existence of hard work and cold and loneliness? The human race is done. The earth is done. Why not give up, I asked myself.
And then I did hear the noise, louder this time, a kind of shuffling tread coming closer.
And then I got the answer. The earth's always been a lonely place, millions of miles from the next planet. And no matter how long the human race might have lived, the end would have come some night. Those things don't matter. What matters is that life is good, has a lovely texture, like some rich cloth of fur or the petals of flowers, crocuses, daffodils, or the fire's glow. And that's as true for the last man as the first.
Still, those steps kept shuffling closer. Pa was talking, and Ma was dreaming with her eyes closed, and Sis was looking at herself sideways in the mirror, and I was the only one who heard the noise. A noise outside.
So right then and there, I told myself that I was going on as if we had all eternity ahead of us. I'd have children, and I'd teach them all I could. I'd get them to read books, try to enlarge and seal the nest. I'd try to keep everything beautiful and alive. I'd keep alive my feeling of wonder, even at the cold and the dark and the distant stars.
Pa.
Shh.
Pa, I hear.
I know.
What is it, Alfred? What is it? What's going on? Oh, you've got to tell me. Pa, I'm scared.
Quiet. But... you heard it?
Uh-huh. A kind of shuffling. Coming toward the nest.
Oh.
Sis, take care of your mother.
It's all right, Ma. Lie down. Come on.
I'll take the hammer. You take the hatchet.
What is it, Pa? What is it?
I don't know. Listen.
It's closer.
Oh, Ma, shh.
Pa, the blanket is moving.
Ready with your axe.
Hello. Who's there? Is there somebody in there?
Come in. It's all right.
They're alive. Alive.
Who are you?
Alfred. Alfred. Hutchinson. Dr. Alfred Hutchinson. You can take off your helmets in here.
The air.
We have air.
We bring it in pails.
Come on, Ralph. Let's take off the helmets.
It's impossible.
Where are you from? We thought we were the only ones.
Los Alamos.
The nuclear laboratory.
Yes, that's right. We get our power from the reactor, using the stockpile of bombs for fuel.
Then there are others. There are other men. There are other men.
Pa, is it all right?
Should I put the axe down?
Yes, yes, it's all right. You can put it down.
You mean you come from another nest?
It's a little bigger than this. We've got a small airtight city with airlocks.
We generate our electricity, food from hydroponics.
I can't believe it. I can't.
I can't believe this. It's impossible. You can't maintain an air supply without hermetic sealing. It's impossible.
Oh, no, no, it's simple. As long as you keep the fire going to melt the air, and enough air boiling to keep the fire burning.
How did you come here? Why?
Well, we keep scouting around for survivors. There are a number of colonies, Brookhaven, Oak Ridge, and Harwell in England, and the Argonne Laboratory in France. We didn't expect to find anything in this city, though. But our detectors picked up a heat trace, so we tracked it down.
Alfred, you're forgetting your manners. We have company.
Of course, of course. Sis, throw a handful of coal on the fire.
Pa, a whole handful?
Doesn't matter now. And Bud, bring out another pail of air.
Well, it's incredible.
And you have laboratories and transport?
We only have a two-seater scout, but if we rip out the bulkhead to the storage compartment, we can make it all right.
We can have you back at Los Alamos in 4 hours.
What's the matter?
I guess we really hadn't thought about it that way.
But, I wouldn't know how to act there. And besides, I haven't any clothes.
Just doesn't seem right to let this fire go out. It's been 18 years. Burning every minute.
But you can't stay here.
Ralph.
But after all...
Ralph.
Oh. Look, Dr. Hutchinson, we'll go out to the ship and bring back a small power heater. I know this is very sudden and upsetting to you. You need a chance to adjust. We'll be back in a few minutes. It's incredible. In buckets, air in buckets.
Well,
they didn't think the nest smelled so good. I could tell.
She had a wave in her hair. Did you see that? And lipstick.
I suppose we have to decide what to do.
Pa, at Los Alamos and those other places, there'll be lots of people, won't there?
Yes.
I mean, not just your father or a brother.
That's right.
Boys?
I suppose so. Somehow I feel a little empty.
Alfred, it's different now that we know others are alive. You don't have to feel the responsibility for keeping the human race going.
Pa, I'd like to see those rockets and laboratories. Wouldn't you, Pa?
I suppose so.
It won't be easy leaving the nest. I mean, it's just right, and there's only 4 of us. It's kind of a scary idea. Big place with a lot of strangers.
You'll get over that feeling, son. The trouble with the world was that it kept getting smaller and smaller till it ended with just the nest. Now it'll be good to have a real, huge world again. The way it was in the beginning.
And so, we're going to leave the nest in the morning. By Pa's clocks. We've got the power heater going now. Seems funny to be this warm when it isn't Christmas or somebody's birthday. But still, it's hard for me to realize that this is the last time I'll go out of the nest. Through all the blankets. To get a pail of air.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the Edward M. Ludwig story, A Coffin for Jacob. With never a moment to rest, the pursuit through space felt like a game of hounds and hares. Or was it follow the leader? Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you A Pail of Air, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Fritz Leiber and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Ronnie Liss, Pamela Fitzmaurice, Richard Hamilton, Eleanor Phelps, Rita Lloyd, and Joe DeSantis. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. And now an important announcement for the listeners of X-1. Beginning next week, X-1 will be heard over most of these stations at a new time, Tuesdays at 8:30 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget, listen next Tuesday from 8:30 to 9 p.m. for X-1. Monitor takes you everywhere this weekend on the NBC Radio Network.
From X-1, that was A Pail of Air for March 28th, 1956. Next, it's going to be Theater 5, and I really like this series. It's just a series that I don't think got enough attention, and there's several reasons for that, but it's really good. So we're going to do the second program in the series from August 4th, 1964, A House of Cards.
Anne?
Yes.
You awake?
Yes, I've been lying here with my eyes open. Something's wrong, isn't it?
Shh, don't wake the children.
It's the oxygenator, isn't it?
Yes, but that's not all.
I thought so. The motor?
No, the motor's fine. You can hear it for yourself. It's the generator I'm worried about.
What's wrong with it?
The fuel tanks. I think the blast shook them and they developed a slow leak. We've been losing fuel steadily for over 3 months now.
Isn't there anything we can do to fix it?
You know as well as I do that we can't. They're buried the same as we are. 40 feet away under 20 feet of earth. Even if I could dig over to them, it wouldn't do any good. The fuel's almost gone.
Oh, Ed, what are we going to do?
I don't know.
How much time do we have left?
I don't know. One day, maybe two.
Oh, Ed, I'm frightened.
And for the children's sake, try not to be.
What are we going to do?
Try to live today just as if it were any other day.
Theater 5 presents A House of Cards. Up. Everybody get up. Another day. Come on.
What time is it?
It's time to get ready for school.
Oh, I don't want to have school again today. I want to go outside and play.
Now, Mark, let's not start that again today.
Get up and get dressed, Mark. We need somebody to make the egg cycle go. Mother's going to make eggs this morning, and we'll need the extra power for the ventilator.
Oh, boy, eggs.
Oh, Mary, big deal, eggs. Every day it's the same old thing. Get up, ride the egg cycle, have school, take a nap, read, have more school.
Mark?
I want to go outside and play.
Play?
Now, Mark, you know very well why we can't go outside and play. The next thing you know, you'll have Mary all upset. Now, get dressed. We need the X-cycle to make the ventilator go over these eggs.
Daddy, yesterday Mark said that the bomb was 100 megaton that hit us.
I did not.
You did too.
I did not.
All right. That's enough.
Well, how big was it, Daddy?
I don't know.
It was 100 megatons, wasn't it, Dad?
No.
See?
On the radio, they said it was 100 megatons.
Let's not talk about the bomb.
It's all right, Ann. On the radio, they said it was between 50 and 100. They didn't know for sure. They have no way of knowing.
Did it knock down our house?
Yes.
And my school?
Probably.
How about Grandpa and Grandma's house?
I don't know. I think not. They're pretty far away.
Are Grandpa and Grandma still alive?
Ed.
It's all right, Ann. I think they're still alive, Mary.
Grandpa's a pretty smart man. He could have gotten them away before the fire got to them.
Well, Mark said there was nobody left alive in the world but us.
Mark.
I did not.
You did too.
Now, Mark, that was a terrible thing to say.
Well, then how come we can't get anything on the radio anymore?
Ed, I don't think this is a subject we ought to discuss before breakfast.
I think it's better they know the truth when they ask for it, Ann. It's better than guessing about half-truths. Now, there could be any number of reasons why we can't pick up anything on the radio anymore, Mark. Maybe our antenna was destroyed by the firestorm that followed the blast. Maybe it's covered with radioactive ash. We know that most of the major cities were hit the same time ours was. Now, maybe the smaller cities don't have broadcasting stations powerful enough to reach us. It could be any number of things. But I can assure you of one thing. Somewhere, somehow, there are people left.
Is my bicycle gone, too?
Yes.
And the swing?
Oh, I knew this was going to lead to no good. Now, Mark, you march over to the X-cycle and get it going. This place is getting full of smoke. Now, Mary, darling, you wash your face and get out your homework. We're going to study fractions today. And you didn't do too well last time. Ed?
Yes?
The children are asleep now.
You gave them a pill?
Mm-hmm. In their orange juice. It should be safe to talk now. What are we going to do?
I don't know. I've been thinking about it.
Couldn't we run for it?
What do you mean?
When the air gives out in here, pick up the children and run. Maybe if we run fast and long enough, maybe we could get out of it.
I've thought about that, too. But the circle of radiation may be anywhere from 50 to 100 miles, depending on the size of the bomb and the wind drift. We couldn't make it in a day or 2 days, even if we ran.
Can't we open the ventilators?
No, it's still too hot out there. The exterior Geiger counter still reads more than 80 wrenches an hour. If we open the exterior ventilator an hour, it'd be as radioactive in here as it is out there.
Why has it stayed so hot so long? You said that within 3 months it would cool down long enough for us to leave.
I thought it would.
Well, what's gone wrong?
I don't know. Any number of things could have. Maybe we were closer to the blast than we figured we would be. Maybe we're covered with radioactive earth. It could be any number of things.
Couldn't we open the door and see?
No, it's too hot to expose the children to. It could ruin them.
Just a crack?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, I wonder what time it is.
2 o'clock.
No, I mean, I wonder what time it is outside.
About the same.
We don't even know what time it is, the day of the week or anything.
Yes, we do. I've kept it all marked off on the calendar.
Yes, but how many times has the clock stopped? Twice? 3 times?
Exactly twice.
Because you forgot to wind
it. Because we both forgot to wind
it. Well, I can't do everything. Cook meals on a single burner, keep house, and raise 2 children in a 9x12 room. I'm sorry, Ed. I didn't mean to snap at you that way. I'm just so tired of it all. It seems you try so hard and you never win. You build a fallout shelter to be safe from the bomb, and you have to worry about the firestorms that follow. So you make it completely self-contained. Water, food, air, enough to last you 6 months in case the radiation's hotter than you think.
Annie.
And the blast knocks the fuel line loose, and all your plans go up in the air like a puff of smoke.
Oh, Annie.
It just isn't fair, Ed. It just isn't
Ann,
fair.
Ann, you've got to control yourself.
I'm tired of being in control of myself. It's like a house of cards. You put one in wrong and the whole thing comes tumbling down.
Annie, please.
It isn't fair. It just isn't
Annie.
Is that it? Is that the generator?
No, that's the oxygenator. When the generator goes, everything will go. The lights, water, everything. And we've got to make some decisions.
Listen.
What?
Listen, it sounds like digging. There it is. Do you hear it?
Yes, I can hear it. Yes, you're right. It is digging.
They found us. Somebody's trying to rescue us.
Ann, wait.
They're here. We're safe.
Ann, stay away from that door.
But they're here. They found us.
Ann, we have no way of knowing who's on the other side of that door. The Geiger counter says it's 80 wrenches an hour out there. A rescue crew wouldn't enter an area this hot even with protective clothing.
But who else could it be?
I don't know. But whoever it is, we'd better make sure before we let him in. If he's been wandering around long out there, he won't be pretty to look at.
Listen, he's still at it.
Whoever it is, he's kept it up over 2 hours.
Who's out there, Dad?
I don't know, Marky, but we're going to find out. Hand me that Geiger counter, son.
You're not going out.
No, I just want to get a radiation reading in the airlock.
Here it is, Dad.
Stand back at the table, Ann, and keep Mary behind you.
All right, stand behind your father, Mark.
There's a reading of 10 just inside the inner door. Hotter in here. 10, 20, 40 at the door. That's hot. That means it's in excess of 80 outside.
Who's out there, Daddy?
I don't know. Let's see if I can make him hear us. There's someone out there, all right. But he won't answer.
Who do you suppose it is?
I don't know.
Bill Bigler.
What?
Bill Bigler from over the next block. He's the only one in our neighborhood that built a fallout shelter besides us.
But what would he be doing out there? He's got a Geiger counter. He knows it's too hot to be moving around out there.
Food.
What?
Food. They've run out of food.
Do you suppose?
I know it is. I talked to Alice on the phone the day after they finished their shelter. She asked me how much food we were stocking, and I said enough for 6 months. Well, she laughed and said they were only stocking for 3 months. Bill said no radiation would linger beyond that, and if it did, they wouldn't want to come up to see what the world looked like.
Could be. This is almost the fourth month. They could have lasted this long if they'd stretched things.
I know it's them.
Oh, they must be starving. We've got to help them.
No.
Anne, they're our neighbors.
We never so much as spoke to them until we built our shelters.
But they're human beings.
Ed, I'm warning you. Stay away from that door. Ed.
My!
Anne, put that rifle down. You're frightening the children.
If you open that door, Ed Johnson, I swear I'll shoot you.
Anne, try to be reasonable.
I am being reasonable. You can't build a shelter to protect your family from radiation and then throw it open to a total stranger.
Bill Bigler is not a total stranger.
He is if he's contaminated with radiation poisoning.
And all I plan to do is put some food and water in the airlock. I'll open the outer door and lock the inner one.
No.
He can't get inside with the inner door locked.
No, but the radiation can. You told me that.
Not that much.
Enough. You know that. Enough to hurt the children.
But, Anne, those people are starving to death.
Well, let them starve.
Anne.
Alice Bigler laughed when I told her we stockpiled enough food and water for 6 months. Well, let her laugh now.
Anne, this is insanity.
I mean what I say, Ed.
Mommy, please don't.
Anne, you're frightening the children. Please put the gun down.
Please, Mom.
Why'd
the lights go out?
Mark, go get the flashlight.
Well, what happened, Dad?
We've just run out of fuel, that's all.
Will we be all right, Dad?
Yes, yes, nothing's wrong. I'll take care of it. It's time to go to bed anyway. Everybody undress and hop into bed.
What about the man outside?
Don't worry, he can't get in. I won't let him hurt you.
I'm scared. Daddy, I'm scared.
Don't be, Mary. It's all right, honey.
He's still at it.
Yes, but he's getting weaker.
What's he doing out there?
It sounds like he's trying to pry the door open. Depending on how long he's been out there, he must be pretty sick. He's probably leaning against the door, vomiting.
Oh, Ed, please.
I'm sorry. Are the children asleep?
Yes, finally. What are we going to do?
I don't know.
Ed, couldn't we please try and run for it?
And the most distance we could cover would be 20, 30 miles. In places, the ashes would be hip deep, maybe higher. In the end, we'd wind up like him. There just wouldn't be any point in it.
Couldn't we try and open the air vents?
No, it's still too radioactive for that. We might just as well open the door.
Oh, why has it stayed so hot for so long? The brochures, everything said you'd be able to leave at the end of 3 months, 4 at the most. Now, what went wrong?
If I knew, Ann, we wouldn't be here. So many things can go wrong that you never count on. Maybe we were just too close to the blast. I don't know.
How much air do you think we have left?
An hour. Maybe less.
What'll happen then?
The oxygen in the room will be gone, and we'll start breathing our own carbon dioxide.
Will it be bad?
I don't know. If you're asleep, it shouldn't be bad. Certainly not as bad as being out there.
Do you think we'd stay asleep through it?
I was just wondering about that.
If we took sleeping pills.
Yes, then I think so.
Well, then that's the way I want us to go, Ed. Asleep. And all of us together.
That's what I was thinking, too.
I'll have to wake the children.
What for?
To give them a pill. I don't want either of them to wake up trying to breathe.
All right, dear, but hurry. Time's running out. I'll put some food and water in the airlock.
But why? You said it wouldn't do him any good.
I know. But maybe it'd be nice if just once before he dies, he knows the world isn't completely devoid of human beings. Hurry, Ann. The air is getting bad.
Mary. Mark. Wake up, Mark. I want you to take these.
Is it time to get up yet?
No, darling. Just drink this and go back to sleep.
Tell me when it's time to get up.
I will. Mary. Mary.
What?
Mother wants you to take these.
What for?
To help you sleep.
I don't want any.
Oh, but Mary, they're good for you.
I don't want any.
Ed. Ed, I...
That's all right. Here. Give them to me. Mary, you have to take your pills, honey. We're all taking them, see? I'm taking mine. And Mommy's going to take hers.
What are they?
Oh, they're just sleeping pills so we can all go to sleep together.
Will we wake up together?
Yes. If we wake up, we'll all wake up the way we went to sleep together.
I want some pills, too.
Here you are, honey.
Good night, Mommy. Good night, Daddy.
Good night, Mary.
I don't want to cry.
It's all right, dear.
I love them both so much.
I know. I love them, too.
I love you all. Everything. So much.
I love you, darling. I'm sorry I couldn't make it work. I tried. I tried very hard.
I know. We all tried. It's not your fault. It was just a house of cards, that's all. It couldn't work.
I love you, Anne.
Just hold me, dear. Try to sleep.
I love you all very much.
I love you too. Just hold me and sleep.
Love you.
Sleep.
Get those stretchers in here.
Take the children first.
Take the woman's pulse, Greg. She got too hysterical near the end.
Do we have the stomachs pumped, Doctor?
No, they took only one sleeping pill apiece. That much will just help them sleep the whole thing off. Be careful with those children there.
Would you say the experiment was a success?
A family of four in a 9x12 fallout shelter for 9 months. Yes, I'd say they did pretty well.
But they lost touch with reality toward the end.
You probably would have, too, if your only contact with reality was the radio. And suddenly that was taken away from you.
But they really thought they were survivors in a fallout shelter. The last people left alive on Earth.
Greg, that was the purpose of the experiment. To change the variables until you find the breaking point. Anybody can survive when everything's running smoothly. But break their communication, disrupt their fuel supply, threaten them with the unknown from without. And they did pretty well. For 2 months, they wouldn't mention to each other that they were losing fuel. Neither one would mention it, for fear of frightening the others. They did pretty well.
Then the experiment was a success.
No, the experiment wasn't a success, but the people were. As long as people have to hide under the ground, all experiments are failures. But maybe we can learn how to protect the people so they can outlive the failures of experimenters. Watch that stretcher there. Be as gentle as you can. That's a human being you're carrying.
Has presented A House of Cards, written by George Bamber and directed by Warren Somerville. In the cast, Vicki Bola, George Petrie, Bryna Rayburn, Cecil Roy, and Guy Sorrell. Audio engineers Bill Sandreuter and Marty Folia. Sound technicians Ed Blaney and M.C. Brock. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Edward A. Byron. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, Box 233, New York, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking.
From Theater 5, that was A House of Cards from August 4th, 1964. Now, for our final program tonight, and I'm giving you 3. You're going to run for your money tonight. It's going to be No Hiding Place. This was aired on Suspense on October 1st, 1961.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Listen now to No Hiding Place, starring Court Benson and Grace Matthews. And written especially for Suspense by William N. Robeson. No, there's no hiding place down there. Not when the gods of wrath loose their terrible swift sword. Not when the hound of heaven carries his quarry down the curving lanes of space. Not when there's the bomb. These things happen to somebody else, not to us. The bomb won't drop on us, we tell ourselves. Death will not come for us. And death, offstage, smiles and nods and agrees.
No one ever dies until he is dead.
Here and there you find a strange one. A citizen and taxpayer who believes what he reads in the papers. A fellow who takes things seriously. A fellow who looks after his own. A fellow like Sam Endover, husband, father, and the man who believes if you don't do it yourself, nobody will do it for you.
To you, maybe, but not for you.
What's that mean?
Nothing, really. Just trying to get things started.
Seems to me you got enough started with that bomb shelter you're digging in the backyard.
Fallout shelter, Mary Lou. No such thing as a bomb shelter these days. Bombs are too big. No protecting against them. Just fallout. No place in the country is safe from radioactive fallout after an attack.
Except us.
And folks like us who've built their own shelters.
Well, just between you and me, Sam, I wouldn't be caught dead in that cave you've dug.
Yeah, you'd sure be caught dead outside of it to come an attack.
Hey, Pop.
Yes, Andy?
There are a couple of fellows outside from the TV station.
TV? Oh, yes.
They want to know where the bomb shelter is.
Fallout shelter, Sandy.
Sam, what is this?
Tell them it's out back, and tell your sister to come out. They'll probably want to put us all on TV, I suspect.
Put us on TV? The very idea, Sam Andover. Springing a thing like this on me without any warning. My hair is a sight. My dress is a mess.
Now, Mary Lou. You look just fine to me.
Oh, now what?
Aha, that'll be the mayor, I imagine.
The mayor?
Yes, you know how politicians like to get in on things like this. It's a big story. Locally, that is.
Sam Andover, I'll be surprised if I ever speak to you again as long as I live.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is my privilege to introduce your friend and mine, his honor, the mayor of Happy Valley.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Charlie Lemon. This is a great and historic occasion, my fellow citizens. It marks the completion of the very first fallout shelter in our fair city. It is not only as your mayor, but as head of your civil defense organization that I am here today to congratulate our public-minded fellow townsman, Sam Andover.
Hear that,
now,
Taylor?
At first sight,
he's talking about me.
The very idea of pulling this on me without any warning. Daddy, do I look all right?
You look scrumptious, honey.
The red light's on. Means the camera's on us.
Merciful heavens.
Say cheese, honey.
This here's Sam Andover and his lovely wife, Mrs. Andover, and his two lovely children. Sam, I want you to know Happy Valley is proud of you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Now, Sam, maybe you'd like to tell all the folks out there how come you came to build this fallout shelter.
Well, Your Honor, it seemed to me everybody was talking about defense and shelters, and nobody was doing anything about it. It seemed like somebody ought to get started, so I decided to build her.
Splendid, splendid. Citizenship in action. Wouldn't you say, Mrs. Andover?
It doesn't make any difference what I say. When my husband gets a bee in his bonnet, it's an ID fixe, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Yes, indeed I do. And what about the young folks? What do you think about your dad's project,
Who, me?
Yes, my dear, you. What's your name?
I'm Cindy.
And I'm Sandy.
Yes, Sandy. Just a minute, Cindy. How do you like this fallout shelter?
Oh, I don't know.
Is it comfortable?
I don't know. I guess so.
Oh, how would you know? You've never even been down in it.
Have you, Sandy?
Sure. I think it's cool and a half.
Cool and... Well, Sam, now how about telling the folks about your shelter, eh?
Well, okay. Well, now up above here, you can see the two ventilating pipes. You pump stale air out of this one, and it's replaced by fresh air through this one. Now inside, well, it isn't a mansion, but it's got all the necessities. Canned goods, bottled water, paper towels, paper plates, first aid kit.
And you've got a radio, of course.
Oh, yes, and extra batteries. Everything to keep the family going for 2 weeks.
Splendid, just splendid. You're to be congratulated, Sam. Happy Valley is indeed proud of you.
It's very impressive, Mr. Andover. But will it work?
What do you mean, Charlie?
Well, do you really think four people could live in that little room for 2 weeks? Well,
of course I do.
Personally, I doubt they could stand it for a week. Even for a weekend.
Now, look here, Charlie Lemon. We're talking about survival. About a matter of life or death.
Yes, I know. But just between you and me, Mr. Andover, would you really put your family down there in that little hole?
I most certainly would, if it became necessary. And I'll prove it to you and to all the other doubters just how good my shelter is.
What do you mean?
Well, I'll take my family into it right now. Just as if we were...
But Sam!
And we'll spend the weekend down there with no discomfort at all. And you can stay here if you like and take our pictures when we come out. Maybe that'll be proof, Mr. Charlie Wise Guy Lemon.
Sam, are you out of your mind?
No, but I'm good and mad and...
That would be a convincing demonstration, Mr. Andover, if you really mean it.
I mean it. Go on, Sandy. Pile in there.
Oh, boy, the whole weekend.
All right, you next, Cindy.
But, Daddy, I've got a date tonight.
No time for dates. This is going to be just like it'd be if there was an attack. In you go.
But, Daddy,
In. All right, you next, Mary Lou.
Sam, I told you I wouldn't be caught dead down there.
You're not going to let me down in front of the TV audience now, are you?
I just might.
Oh, Mary Lou, please be a pal.
Sam, I...
Besides, it's beginning to rain.
Oh, Sam.
Smile for the camera, like you were saying cheese, not phones.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Sam Andover has just locked himself and his family into his backyard fallout shelter to demonstrate how comfortable and safe it is. Good luck to you, Mr. Andover, and to your courageous family who will spend the weekend in your homemade fallout shelter. We return you now to our studios.
Yeah, you were a little hard on Sam Andover.
Maybe, but it's a better story this way, isn't it?
Well, yes, I suppose so.
Better story for civil defense. We might even be able to tie it into a network news show. Get it all over the country.
My, my, that would be wonderful for Happy Valley, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't hurt you either. Come next November, would it, Mr. Mayor?
Well, I wasn't thinking of that.
Of course not.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah?
Studio's on the horn.
Thanks, Joe. Charlie Lemon here.
This is Mr. Richards, Charlie.
Yes, sir?
That was a nice fast one you just pulled on Sam Andover.
Well, you know how it is.
You made a good show out of a routine pickup.
I thought so.
Well, here's one that may top that.
What is it?
You get that mobile unit up to Larson Dam as quick as you can.
What's the trouble?
Well, there's none yet, but there may be plenty. The rain that just started down here is a cloudburst upriver. They're afraid the dam can't handle it.
I'm on my way. Mobile one, over and out. Wrap it up, boys. We're pulling out.
But what about them, Andover and his family?
You heard what Sam said. They're safe down there for 2 weeks.
Say now, you can't beat this, can you? All the comforts of home.
Like what?
Why, electric lights, radio, running water.
No television. Why isn't there any TV, Dad?
It takes up too much room, makes too much heat. And anyway, under attack conditions, we'd have to depend on radio for instructions.
What are we going to do without any TV?
There are books.
Yes, indeed. The Bible, Shakespeare, and what to do till your doctor comes.
And there are magazines. Here, Cindy, here's your favorite movie magazine.
I saw that one 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Look, Dad, can't I get out of here? I got a very important date with Alan.
I'm sure Alan understands. He probably saw you on TV.
Oh, no.
Or heard about you on radio. You're a celebrity, you know. First on TV and then on radio. We all are. Celebrities.
Celebrity or not, the air's getting close down here.
All right. Sandy, crank up the vent blowers.
Sure, Dad.
There. That clears her out in a hurry.
It does. I haven't noticed any difference.
You will.
Sam, listen. I've gone along with this the way you asked me to, but don't ask too much. I'm telling you now I intend to sleep in my own bed tonight.
Then can I go on my date?
You two don't seem to realize how important this is.
I realize you let yourself be tricked by that smooth-talking Charlie Lemon into putting your family through one of the silliest, most uncomfortable, darn fool
things. Wait a minute. Look at it this way, Mary Lou. When people see how easy it is for us to get by in a shelter...
Easy? Huh.
Maybe they might build shelters for themselves.
Now, here's the latest on the storm.
Turn up the radio, son. Let's see what they have to say about us.
Have been falling steadily in the city and surrounding countryside for several hours. This unprecedented downpour has placed a strain on the Larson Dam, and it's now doubtful if it can hold through the night.
Oh, no.
Residents in Hawthorne Ravine, beneath the dam, are being evacuated by police and civilian defense teams. Elsewhere, mudslides have blocked several roads in the outskirts of the city.
Wow-wee.
Just 5 minutes ago, the mayor declared a state of emergency in Happy Valley and wired the governor to designate the town as a disaster area.
Oh.
In addition to the flood danger, mudslides created by the heavy rain are threatening homes in many areas. Civil defense.
I don't understand this. They haven't mentioned us on the radio all evening.
They have more important things on their minds, it would appear. And well, it's time to go to bed.
Very well, dear. You want a lower or an upper?
I said go to bed. In my own bed, in my own house.
But we can't do that, Mary Lou. That'd be cheating, going back on my word.
Nobody's going to know or care. They've forgotten all about us with this storm. Well, Cindy, are you ready for bed?
Oh, yes, Mother.
I want to stay down here.
I don't care what you men do, but us ladies are going to sleep in the house tonight.
Now, listen, Mary Lou.
You listen to me, Sam. I'm fed up. I've had it up to here. Now, you let me out of here this minute.
The lights! Hey,
what's that?
Turn on the lights!
Just a minute. Wait till I find a flashlight. This storm. Power failure, that's all.
That's all.
Daddy, you know I hate the dark.
Here's a flashlight, Dad.
Good boy, Sandy.
I'm scared, Daddy.
Now, there's nothing to be scared about, honey. We're all together.
Are we? Are you ready to stop this nonsense and go back to the house?
Oh. All right, Mary Lou, I guess so.
But there probably won't be any lights there either.
There'd be hot water and room to move around
in. All right, you win. We'll go back to the house. That's funny.
What?
The door's stuck. Here, son, take this light a minute, will you? Try to free her. She's giving a little.
Sam, look.
Eh? What?
Squeezing around the edge of the door.
Mud. Well, it's no wonder I couldn't push it open against all that muck. They said on the radio, mudslides. We're buried in a mudslide.
What are we going to do?
Nothing, Mary Lou. There's nothing we can do. We're stuck here until they come and get us.
I'm scared, Daddy. I'm scared.
No, Sam, no. We can't stay down here. Buried alive.
Now, shut up, both of you. We can and we will. This shelter was designed and equipped to keep the four of us alive for 2 weeks.
We'll all be dead in 2 weeks.
They'll come for us long before
that. No. They'll forget. They've got too many other people to take care of. They'll leave us here to rot in our graves.
I said to shut up.
Gee, Pop.
Oh, Sam. You hit me.
Well, I'm sorry, darling. I had to. This is no time to panic. Sandy.
Yes, Dad?
Get on the air pump. I want to make sure our ventilation is working.
Sure, Pop.
Yeah, she's pulling the used air out okay. Yep. We're getting good fresh air from the outside. Good. Now, listen to me. We have nothing to worry about. Absolutely nothing. We're in the identical situation we'd be in after an H-bomb attack. We're forced to remain in this shelter for an indeterminate length of time. We have fresh air. We have food. We have a little light.
What happens when those batteries burn out?
They won't. If we use the light carefully, they'll last more than 2 weeks. There's only one thing that can hurt us.
What, Daddy? What can hurt us?
Ourselves. Cowardice. Panic. Tears. Hysteria. Like I said, we're okay and we're provided for. And there's only one thing that is asked of us.
What's that, Dad?
That we survive.
No hiding place down there. Not when forces beyond man's control conspire against man's comfort and convenience. No hiding place. When thunderheads climb majestically in the summer afternoon and dump a Niagara of rain in one little river valley. A whim of nature from which no man is altogether safe. But at least, nature's whim and not man's. A storm that is over with the next day's sun. Not a man-made sun exploding and poisoning air and earth and sky for days on end.
Mobile One, Charlie Lemon speaking.
This is Richards, Charlie. You going to call it a day?
2 days and a night. I'm beat.
Well, I'll bet you are. Will you take tomorrow off? Now I'll have Eddie Hartwig cover the mobile unit for you.
Thanks, Mr. Richards. We'll be pretty quiet, just clean up stuff. Dam's holding and the water's dropping. Of course, the mudslides will be giving some trouble until they settle, but they're mostly in new subdivisions in the hills. And everyone's been evacuated from the really bad areas.
Well, you can be proud of yourself, Charlie. You've got a lot of fine pickups the last couple of days, beginning yesterday morning with that family in the fallout shelter.
Holy smokes, I forgot all about them.
Well, no wonder. You've been a little busy.
No, listen, Mr. Richards. They live in Holly Glens. That's the site of one of the worst mudslides. And I was the one who dared them to go into that shelter. It's all my fault.
But they're all right. They're in the shelter.
That's for sure. But how do you know they're all right?
I wear my pink pajamas in the summer when it's hot. I wear my woolen nightie in the winter when it's not. And sometime in the springtime and sometime in the fall, I jump between the sheets without a darn thing on at all.
It's a long, long, long time since I heard that song. Where did you learn it, Sandy?
In the Scouts.
Well, I'll be. That's where I first heard it, yeah. When I was a scout, yeah? Way back before the war.
Which war, Dad?
Well, the World War, of course.
One or two?
Sandy, your father's a young man. Why, he almost missed the Second World War. He was so young.
Yes, I had to lie about my age, but they finally made me a drummer boy with an armor division.
Come on, Dad.
Mary Lou, this is wonderful.
What is, honey?
We're talking to each other. We're kidding with each other. We're not looking at television. It's just wonderful.
Oh, it is nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mary Lou. I'm glad to make your acquaintance, Sandy.
Hi.
And to know you, Cindy.
Oh, Daddy.
We've all been away from each other far too long.
Sam?
Yes, darling.
Hold my hand.
Like that?
Like that. And squeeze it hard. Like that. Oh, Sam, I don't want to get lost from you again.
You won't, honey, I promise.
Daddy.
Yes, dear.
I don't feel so good.
What's the matter?
I've got a headache. And I feel sort of woozy.
Oh, well, we'll fix that. Sandy, man the pumps.
Aye, aye, sir.
All you need is a little fresh air, my girl. And that's what we got. Fresh air coming up.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah?
Something's funny. This pump's hard to turn.
Well, let me see. Yeah, so it is. All right, keep turning while I test the suction. No, it's not pumping any air out. Hand me that broom, Sandy.
Here you are.
Yep. I just poke it up the pipe and see what's obstructing it. Oh, my.
Sam, what is it?
Oh, no.
Sam, where's all that mud coming from?
From the ventilating pipe, that's where. The mudslide's covered the shelter completely. It's blocking the vents. It's cut off our air. We're trapped down here.
Sam, now don't you press the panic button.
You're right. I'm sorry.
I wouldn't want to have to slap your face.
Oh, that would never do. Not in front of the children.
Daddy, my headache, something awful.
I'll get you some aspirin. But I'm not sure it'll do any good.
Oh, why not?
Well, I think Daddy better tell you.
Yeah. Now, listen carefully, kids, and quietly. We're in a bad spot. Our air is cut off. We only have as much air to breathe as there is in the shelter. Now, I want you to lie down and don't make any sudden movements. And don't breathe deeply. We've got to conserve the air as long as we can.
For how long, Dad?
I don't know, Sandy. Until they come and dig us out.
But they won't come. Mother said so.
The crying won't make them come. Now, knock it off.
Yes, Daddy.
Take this aspirin, dear.
Wait a minute. We're having so much fun entertaining ourselves, I forgot all about the portable radio. Turn it on, son.
Yeah.
Let's see if anybody's got a bigger disaster than we have.
Evacuation post in the basement of the police station. Two bulldozers are needed at once in Holly Glen. Two bulldozers to Holly Glen at
Dad,
once.
Listen. Yeah. Holly Glen.
Attention, maybe they remember.
They have. Listen.
This is a message to Sam Andover and his family in their bomb shelter in Holly Glen. Your shelter is buried beneath a mudslide.
Mudslide?
We are making every effort to dig you out.
Oh, thank God.
Bulldozers are on their way. But meantime, volunteer civil defense workers are shoveling away at this mountain of mud from which I am speaking directly above you. Hang
right
on.
Above us.
Don't panic. Help is on its way.
On its way. But will it get here soon enough?
How does it look, Mr. Mayor?
That mudslide's treacherous, Charlie. As soon as the dozer cuts away a path, the hill comes down and fills it up.
Have they any estimate on when they'll get through?
It's anybody's guess.
I feel terrible about this. You know, it's my fault they're down there.
Don't feel too bad yet. Look at what happened to their house. That big tree fell right across the bedroom wing. They'd all be dead if they'd been there last night.
Maybe they're dead anyway.
Let us pray that they're not.
Yeah, you do that. Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
Cut me into program channel.
Okay. Start in my queue.
This is a message to Sam Andover and his family. This is a message to Sam Andover and his family. Charlie Lemon speaking. This mudslide is giving us a lot of trouble, but the bulldozers are making headway. Two of them have been working for the last hour.
Sandy.
And we've sent for two
more.
Sandy. So don't worry.
He's
We're going to get you
Sandy.
Out. I repeat.
She's still breathing.
This is a message to Sam Andover and his family.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Hush. Don't get excited. Don't use up the air, dear.
It's all my fault. I got you into this. I made you.
You brought us all together, Sam. That's what's most important. We're together. For the first time, long, long time.
Sam?
Yes, dear.
Kiss me, Sam. I guess I'm slipping. I thought I heard...
So did I.
The tricks our imagination plays on us.
No. No, it isn't imagination. They made it. They got you.
Oh, thank God.
All right. I'll take Cindy. Can you handle Sandy?
Yes, dear.
Mother.
Okay, darling, we're all right.
Smile for the television cameras.
I know. Like I was saying, cheese, not prune.
Suspense. You've been listening to No Hiding Place, starring Cort Benson and Grace Matthews, and written especially for Suspense by William N. Robeson. Suspense is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Heard in tonight's story were Lee Vines as Charlie Lemon, Leon Janney as the mayor, Jimsy Summers as Cindy, Larry Robinson as Sandy, William Smith as Mr. Richards, and Ivor Francis as the announcer. This is Stuart Metz, inviting you to listen again next week when we return with Dreams, written by Jack Bundy. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Stars shed their inhibitions on Arthur Godfrey Time weekdays on the CBS Radio Network.
That was No Hiding Place on Suspense from October 1st, 1961. Well, I hope you all enjoyed that. That's good stuff. I had fun with the survival stuff. It was really kind of scary, but it's good. So hope you enjoyed it. I had a good time with it, and then we'll talk about it when we get done here. So that's all I have for now. Enjoyed it. And we'll talk again next time. I don't know when I'll be back. Probably another couple of months, and we'll do something else. So that's it from here. Good night.